Powerful Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello, welcome to Church of the Masses. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. This is the show where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. I'm a Catholic, a devout Catholic, and I was a nun for 9.5 years in a media community. And then I went to Hollywood afterwards and worked for 23 years in the business as a screenwriter and a producer, a script doctor, all kinds of things. I taught RCIA in the industry for many years. And then I went and got my doctorate and started a program. I had started a program to train screenwriters called Act One, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. And now I am at Regent University here in Virginia Beach, and I am heading up their MFA and master's programs in screenwriting. So if you want to become a screenwriter, but you don't know how you would ever go to graduate school to do it, we have an online program. It's completely online, a full-time online program at Regent University, and we're revamping that even now to make it even better. But that's one option for you if you want to become a screenwriter. So check out Regent University's MFA in screenwriting. So what we do here is usually I talk about the news for the first segment, anything of interest that's out there. And then the next couple segments, I usually have a guest, and we talk about what their projects are or some issue. And today, of course, it's going to be the Oscars. Just getting over that annual trauma. And so award season is finally over, thank God. And it's early this year because the Oscars were like 3 weeks earlier than they usually are. So I have a friend, a colleague, who's going to be talking to us about the telecast. She and I sat together in exasperation, eating snacks and watching my industry make an absolute fool of itself. So anyway, just a heads up of what I thought about the telecast this year. But anyway, we're going to talk about that. And then we'll see how it goes. If we're still going, we'll keep going. Otherwise, I'm going to do a review of this very bizarre movie, Birds of Prey, Harley Quinn, which is in the theaters, which I went to see. And in my role as sewer inspector for the people of God, and we can talk about how that movie bombed and why. But let's just jump in here with some news that happened. And one, just right off the top, I want to mention that Act One, it's called Act One Program on the web, all spelled out, Act One Program, is just opened up their summer programs. So if you want to be a producer or a writer in the entertainment industry, or you just want to know how to do it and do it wherever you are, they have amazing programs that run in the summers in LA. And they have an online component too, so you can be part of the program from wherever you are. But go to the program and check it out. It's an amazing network. About 1,500 people now in the network or more. It's been going on for 20 years. They really know what they're doing. And I'm biased, of course, but I think that Act One is a great bridge for people into the entertainment industry. So if you're a Christian and you want to make beautiful work, check out Act One Program on the web. Or if you have a niece or a nephew or a grandchild who wants to be a writer or a producer in the industry, then you should send them Act One's way. They will thank you. It's an amazing way to get in the industry and come out with a network, which most people who go to university and study how to be in the industry, they don't come out with that at all. They only come out with information, but not with a community. So Act One's keynotes are spirituality, excellence, beauty, and community. So they stress that in all of their classes. And so it's a very rigorous program about the technical aspects of the craft, but it also about the spiritual challenges of being in the industry. So I'm very high on Act One. I still think it's very necessary, and I'm glad they're still going. We're in their 21st year now. It's amazing. And so check that out, act1program.com. I want to mention that the sad thing this week that kind of happened, kind of was overlooked in all of the hubbub of the impeachment and the in this past week, the Iowa caucus disaster and then the Oscars. was that a good man died, and his name was Orson Bean. Orson was kind of, for those of us in the Hollywood Christian community, Orson was always kind of on the periphery or very often at the center. He was also in FOA, which is the Friends of Abe group, which is the conservative group in Hollywood. But Orson, some of you will know him. He was born in 1928 in Burlington, Vermont. He actually was related to Calvin Coolidge on his mother's side. So he's 91 years old. He has 106 acting credits. He was a fixture on the television, especially in the 70s and early 80s. But he actually has a TV series credit from 2020 this year already. Grace and Frankie TV series. He was in, and there's one in post production that he was in. So the guy was amazing. Shows like Dr. Quinn, Desperate Housewives, How I Met Your Mother. And then if you push back even further, Seventh Heaven, Will and Grace, Ellen, just keeps going. The Facts of Life, he was on Love Boat, Ellery Queen, Twilight Zone, really amazing list, and you keep going back. His first credit was in 1952 in the Goodyear Playhouse. But Orson had a really interesting life where he had been blacklisted for being a communist and had been completely secular in his values. Absolutely, if you Google around on the web, you'll find his testimony that he had no faith life at all. But then he had an experience, and it sent him into a search for God, and it changed his life. And interestingly, so he was so on the left that he was blacklisted for being a communist. But it ends up going so far then the other way that his daughter, Susanna Bean, married Andrew Breitbart, who founded Breitbart. So now he's related to the center of the conservative, one of the centers of the conservative right and media right. Anyway, but I met Orson at several events, and he was always lovely and gracious and cheerful, and everybody loved him. Very wonderful, wonderful man. So he was a fixture. He entertained America for the better part of 70 years in so many ways. And so he was killed tragically. He was out for a walk on Friday night, and a car ran him over, which is just a terrible way to go. But on the other hand, he had lived a long and good life. So say a prayer for Orson Bean. He was a wonderful man, and I was very happy to have met him on several occasions and laughed at with him. He's a very funny guy, and he was one of the good ones. So, we've lost so many great, people from that era that were really about entertainment more than they were about social engineering, which is where they are today. Kirk Douglas died this week too. Another giant. They don't make stars like that anymore. Another thing I want to point out is there's a war going on right now on content filtering. And so Hollywood hates content filtering. If you know what this is, it's people take movies and they bleep out of them language that's problematic or scenes that are too sexual or too graphically violent. And this allows people to watch the movies or television shows without having to be exposed to these things that are highly objectionable. Now, Hollywood, when it was in the DVD phase, Hollywood fought very hard against companies that were reissuing DVDs that had been content filtered. And I was ambivalent about it because part of me was like, you know what, you don't really get to just censor somebody. On the other hand, if I had kids, it's like, wow, that's a really great movie, but too bad we can't watch it because there's a 20-second scene in it that is disgusting or obscene or the language is just perverse. They didn't need to do that. And so I've kind of come changed my mind on that. But anyway, so Congress actually passed a law to protect content filtering from Hollywood, which hates it. That was the Family Movie Act in 2005. Well, now it's streaming. So there's a streaming service that's been trying to do content filtering, and Hollywood, of course, took them to court, and is winning on the streaming side because the law didn't. It's called VidAngel, and the law only spoke about DVDs. It didn't speak about streaming because there was no streaming in 2005. That's how fast things are moving. But anyway, if you want to see more, Concerned Women for America are involved in fighting this fight, trying to get the Family Movie Act changed so that it also applies to the streaming services. I really think we need to have this. It's, you know, kids are just getting sexualized and they're getting exposed to way too much. Somebody pointed out that if you look at the three of the titles nominated for Best Picture this year, The Irishman, Marriage Story, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that just those three films had 600 instances of profanity, 30 instances of sex or nudity, and 50 instances of graphic, gory violence. Just those three movies nominated for Best Picture. So, yeah, I think if you have kids, you do care about controlling what they're exposed to so that things aren't normalized that you don't believe in. And so, yeah, support VidAngel. Check out Concerned Women of America. The Family Movie Act extended to streaming services. I support that. There's a weird story of Corey Feldman's new documentary. So Corey Feldman and his friend, we gotta wrap it up. But anyway, when I come back, I'm just gonna say a word about that. It's kind of a weird story. So this is Barbara Nicolosi. This is Church of the Masses. Stay tuned for more.
We finally did it. We have a Catholic Mental Health Conference on April 25th, 2020, here at the Sacred Heart Chapel with Dr. Luis Sandoval. He's going to be speaking on the basics of mental illness versus what we consider normal. Number one, he's going to go on the basics of mental illness versus what we consider normal. Second hour, depression, anxiety versus oppression and obsession. The third hour, bipolar disorders. Oh my gosh, infestation and possession. He's going to talk on mental health with the spiritual aspect. Number four, talk will be on drug use, altered mental status versus demonic influence. I want to hear that talk. I hope you do too. Go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call us at 877-526-2151. The date is April 25th, 2020. Be there by calling 877-526-2151. God bless you.
Sirach 11:24 says, "Do not say, 'I am self-sufficient. What harm can come to me now?'" According to St. Catherine of Siena, presumption is like vermin burrowing at the root of the tree of our soul. If we do not uproot it with great care and humility, it will eventually destroy the soul. May God keep us from all presumption of mind and heart, and realize that we depend on Him for everything.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again, and welcome back to Church of the Masses. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. I'm a screenwriter. I'm a professor. I'm a Catholic. And all those things come together in this show every week. We talk about movies, talk about television. We talk about anything that's out there culturally. So right before the break, I was just starting to talk about this documentary that Corey Feldman has put out there. It's going to be airing only one night on March. March 9th. March 9th at 8 p.m. Tickets go on sale February 22nd at MovieWeb. And it's the first time a movie's ever been shown in this kind of platform. But they only have they're only having one night, and the reason is because this film was rejected by every distributor, including Netflix, refused to air the film. What is it? It's called The Rape of the Two Corys. Corey Feldman and his friend Corey Haim were two young actors in Hollywood, and they have long contended, Feldman has long contended, that they were basically sex trafficked out to high big stars in Hollywood, that there's a pedophile ring that attacks especially young boys in the industry, young actors, child actors. And so Corey Haim, I believe he committed suicide. He was in such despair over what had happened to him. And Feldman made a promise that he would tell the story. So he has, and he's created this documentary, and Hollywood has done everything in its power to shut it down, and no one will distribute this movie. So it really shows that there's a lot of real darkness going on in my industry, and when you see something like this, I mean, they'll show anything, but they won't show a documentary about the pedophile ring that's operating in Hollywood. So anyway, if you're interested, it's called Truth, The Rape of the Two Corys. I haven't seen it. I don't imagine it's pretty graphic, but it's going to air. Go to MovieWeb.com and check it out. As a side note, MovieWeb is a really interesting kind of new platform where people can get national distribution for a feature film on, you know, if they can pay for it, and then see how many people will sign up. So it's going to be a whole new way of us watching movies now. It's been, you know, inaugurated by the streaming services. So there it is. Okay, so now let's talk about the Oscars. And for this, I am asking my friend and colleague, Professor Angela Andrews, to help me. She and I sat on the sofa together and watched The Horror on Sunday. Angela, welcome.
Thank you, Barbara. Good to be here.
Yes, so Angela has joined me before in reviewing a movie, and so I just kind of asked her, I was like, let's talk about what we saw on Sunday night. So there's an article in Deadline Hollywood called What Now? An Early Little Watched Oscar Show Leaves Too Much Time to Think. Well, one of the things that's happened is that they moved the Oscars up for some reason. This one was 3.5 weeks early than any other show has been. And so not sure what they were thinking then, but usually you have all this time between the Super Bowl and March Madness where they're preening and posturing and they're gearing up and it's all everybody's, you know, canvassing for their thing. But this year they moved it up and it didn't work. So they were anticipating Friday that 30 million people would tune into the Oscars. And when in actual fact, it was 23.6 million viewers. This is a rock bottom people signing on to watch the broadcast. And so now everybody's like, oh, what happened? You know, why did this happen? Maybe it was because it was too early. Personally, I don't think it was because it was too early. I think it was because of a few factors. And one of them being that the Oscars are not what they used to be. And in one way, I'm going to say how they were not what they used to be is in terms of class and glamour. And Angela, you and I spoke about this, that the red carpet show, they had this guy in drag. Did you catch that? Were you there at that point when they were showing him?
It was impossible to miss.
Yeah. It was impossible to miss. This big man, black man, I guess he's a comic or something, but there he was interviewing the stars who were, you know, decked out, and he was in drag. And it wasn't even, I hate to say this, but it wasn't even pretty drag. Like, it was very garish. It didn't match the top and the bottom. And everybody was just like laughing and ha-ha, isn't this cute? And I didn't think it was cute. I didn't think it was attractive. I thought it was disrespectful. But can you imagine if your sons, your manly sons, said, oh, let's turn on the Oscars and see. And then they turned on and they saw that. Like, I'm thinking of my nephews. They would immediately say, you know, later much. And that would do them in. I mean, what about your kids?
Definitely the same thing. I think he also obscured any of the ladies walking down in any of their finery.
Yeah, he was so garish that everybody was looking at him, and he was just kind of blocking everything out. Now, that's just an example of one thing that I thought was not only a lack of class. I mean, that to me gets close to being perverse, but there was another one that I noticed, and I had seen him in the background, Timothée Chalamet. So Timothée Chalamet is all the rage right now. He was on, among other things, Little Women, and he was there because Little Women was nominated for Best Picture. But Timothée Chalamet came in wearing a tracksuit. And there's a couple articles about this that apparently it was all over Twitter. People were trying to figure out, you know, what is he dressed as? A mechanic, a janitor, a car valet? But in fact, it was a tracksuit made by Prada. And yes, he did have a vintage Cartier brooch on the chest pocket, but it was a tracksuit. And you say, you know, could you ever imagine Clark Gable or Humphrey Bogart, you know, or Gregory Peck showing up at the Oscars in a tracksuit? Like, how did we get here?
I think it diminishes the it's not celebrating film anymore. It's celebrating the rapper that it's in, I suppose.
Yeah. It's celebrating the rapper. You're absolutely right. And it was so little about the movies. So much of this was, you know, and now the Oscars are always, you know, people are always going to make some kind of a stand for something. But to me, this wasn't a stand for anything. It was just disrespectful, you know, and that continued on with the show. So they had this opening number by, I forget her name, some singer, African-American singer. And do you remember her name? I don't remember.
I don't.
Yeah. But, you know, she was doing, they had Nazis dancing on the stage. They had animal, you know, people dressed like animals. I guess it was meant to be in some ways a tribute to things that were in the various movies. But, you know, dancing Nazis is always, you know, going to look kind of weird. And then she wrapped up her number by, I believe, laying down in the aisle, you know, between all the stars.
Did, yeah.
You know, like again, you know, what in the world is going on there? You know, it's not funny. It's not daring. It's not talent. It's just, it's just embarrassing to me a bit, you know, but especially because it's the Oscars. This used to be about class and glamour and it's not anymore.
I think that the elevation of the form and all the associated artistic things that go into it, not the spectacle of vague meaning.
Yeah, very good. You know, a spectacle of just everyone trying to stand out and be recognized, not for being talented, not for their achievement in the movies, but just for being kind of in your face. You know, like everybody's got to make their mark. It's that Born This Way thing of Lady Gaga showing up at the Grammys wearing meat. You know, it's kind of like now Everybody's Lady Gaga, you know. And but it made me sad because I think there was something wonderful about the glitz and glamour of the Academy Awards in the past. You know, it shows the industry off in a beautiful way, but that's gone now. People are, they're just, everybody has to kind of make a spectacle of themselves. And so I found that very disappointing. But anyway, so another note that I wanted to point to was the, and I wasn't aware of this at the time, but apparently it became a big thing that the Academy has actually had to respond to since, and that was the snubs of people during the In Memoriam segment, people that got left out of the In Memoriam, which is, to me, the only part of the thing that was pretty classy still. You know, they that's the one part of the night that I always do like to see, and they did keep it respectful. But sure enough, they left out Tim Conway. They left out Luke Perry. They left out Jan Michael Vincent. They left out Don Knotts. They left out Robert Conrad. And they left out someone, Pollard, who was nominated for an Oscar. What's his name? I can't remember the first name there, but it was nominated for an Oscar for Bonnie and Clyde. Very good. Michael J. Pollard. Very good. Thank you. And then Denise Nickerson, who was famous for being Violet in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. She died, too. I think people are saying, how come, like, who gets to decide who gets to be in the in memoriam and who isn't? And like everything Academy Awards, it turns out that it's about clout, right? It's about who can kind of get them, you know, selves bought in, which studio is championing who. But it's just odd to me that you have some unknown costume designer and you leave out Michael J. Pollard, you know, who's, you know,
right.
So, yeah. But, you know, I mean, other than that, I wasn't offended that night because I didn't know who they were leaving out. But actually, a lot of people are screaming about this. And so they're going to have to work out some way of doing it in the future now, because people are really like, oh, wow, how come people who got left in and who got left out? But I don't know. I'm not sure what else to say about
that. It's supposed to be a collaborative effort, so not, you know, don't pick and choose, I guess.
Yeah, don't pick and choose, and especially not based on which studio is putting up more money, you know, who you're currying favor to. I mean, that just stinks if that's what's going on, you know. So another thing that I thought we could talk about was this weird moment in the show where Eminem came and performed a song that he won the Oscar for 17 years before in 2003. You remember at the time I said to you when we were watching, what is this? And who is that guy? And both of us are too old or, I don't know, unhip that we didn't recognize him.
We looked him up, though, and found out. And the weird thing was people our age were, you know, singing the lyrics like it was a tune from their childhood or something.
You know, it almost was in 2003. And so hold that thought. We'll come back and talk about, because Eminem has come out now and said why he finally showed up. So stay tuned. We're talking the Oscars. This is Barbara Nicolosi on Church of the Masses.
This is Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio. This March, VMPR, in association with the Catholic Resource Center, will be hosting a special conference for the Adoramus Society. Adoramus at the Triduum, a conference on the spirituality of the Triduum liturgies, featuring speakers Father Joseph Fessio, Dr. Anthony Lillis, and Christopher Karstens, addressing such topics as developing a liturgical spirituality, the spirituality of Holy Thursday, the spirituality of Good Friday, and the spirituality of the Paschal Vigil and Easter season. It all takes place March 14th, 2020, at the historic Sacred Heart Chapel at 381 West Center Street, Covina, California, 91723. You can register online at vmpr.org or call now at 877-526-2151 to reserve your seat today for Adoramus at the Triduum.
This is Terry Barber. I want to thank you for supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And here's an easy way to support us by going to smile.amazon.com and type in Catholic Resource Center or Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And when you log in your Amazon account and you purchase products, a portion of it will go right back in supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And it doesn't cost you a dime. I want to thank you ahead of time because that supports us year-round. May God bless you and your family.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello and welcome back. This is Church of the Masses, and we're talking the Oscars. And I've got my friend and colleague, Angela Andrews, Professor Angela Andrews from Regent University, with me here. We watched the spectacle together Sunday night, and so I asked her to come in and I'll turn the light on here so that helped. Anyway, to come in and help me talk about it. So there's another thing I want to mention here. Hold on, let me get this light on here. Sorry, this is very bad production design, but maybe that helps. Okay. So another thing we got to talk about, which most people wouldn't know, is the swag bags. The swag bags at the Oscars this year were $225,000 swag bags. What's a swag bag? So when people go to a junket, when they see a new movie, or you go to a premiere, certain Hollywood events, they will give you a bag of swag. And it will be usually something like, you know, cupcakes and, you know, maybe some kind of little piece of jewelry, maybe, you know, something small. There'll be magnets with people's promotional stuff on it. Or movie swag, you get a hat and things like that. Well, this swag thing has been going up and up in the Oscars over the last 20 years to be quite disgusting, I think, because one of the things that they talk about so much was inequality, income inequality, and, you know, horrible rich billionaire Donald Trump and how he's just profiteering. And meanwhile, they themselves, all of the stars who attended the Academy Awards got a $225,000 swag bag, which included a $78,000 12-day cruise, a $20,000 facial rejuvenation treatments, $20,000 in matchmaking services, among other things. 80 items were in the Oscars gift bag, including a 24-karat gold-plated vaping device. Angela, why don't you react to that? What do you think when you hear that they... going to the Oscars now is a way to pick up almost $250,000 in treats?
I think it's ridiculous when they have so many other agendas and things that they criticize other people for across the nation, you know, not doing this and not, you know, responding to issues, that why wouldn't they put that money into something like, you know, a donation has been made in your name or something useful.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. You know, probably 200 of these things are given out to the stars. Meanwhile, just right outside on Hollywood Boulevard, there are homeless tents all over the place. You know, they push them away so that they're out of sight for the big events, but there they are. And any one of those swag bags could probably have taken a homeless person into, you know, being cared for 3 to 5 years, you know, and here they are lecturing us all. I just thought it was like the perfect kind of like hypocrisy. You know, you couldn't write that any better. And adding to that, it was another benchmark for the ceremony was that the Communist Manifesto was quoted at the Oscars. So best documentary was American Factory. It got the Oscar for Best Documentary. And American Factory was a production of the new production company of Barack Obama and Michelle. And they, this is their one of their first projects. And so, of course, it gets the Oscar. But it was about factory workers and the Chinese and Chinese corporation working with GM, et cetera, blah, blah. I haven't seen it yet. But Anyway, the woman who was one of the two producers threw out there that things will get better when workers of the world unite. This is a quote from the foundational Marxist text, the Communist Manifesto, written in 1848. And so there it was quoted at the Oscars. You just have to say, again, I'm sorry, you either get to say the quote of Marx or you give up the swag bag, but you can't have both. I don't know. What do you think, Angela?
I don't know. I think most of the folks would go for the swag bag.
Yeah, I think so,
cleaning
too.
Up the streets right outside, you know.
I know. The workers of the world that are going to clean up after them.
Sickening irony.
Yes. I mean, if irony was fatal, they would have died, huh? All right. So now we have to talk about the real issue. And, you know, we might push into the next segment. Can you hang into the next segment, too, Angela? Or do you
I
have somewhere
can
to
hang.
Go? Okay, good. Because we're I just wanted to get that stuff out of the way. But let's talk about the big elephant in the room. And that is Parasite. Parasite. So this movie, which Angela and I saw together, won not only Best Foreign Film, but Best Screenplay, Original Screenplay, and then it won Best Picture. I think it won one more, too. I don't remember, but
well,
I think it won.
The international one.
Yeah, Best Foreign Picture, Best Foreign Film it won, and then it won Best
Foreign,
Picture.
Okay.
Right. So I was kind of horrified by this. I mean, what did you think, Angela, when they called it out for Best Picture? What was your first reaction?
I was just stunned that it won. It just was like a dry sponge and sopped up all the big awards and left all the other talent just sort of, you know, out there in the wings, I guess.
Yeah, and especially because it hadn't really won. You know, you think of Best Picture as being a preponderance of excellence, right? You know, it's like, okay, it's the sum of, you know, it's got the best score, it's got best acting, it's got the best, you know, effects, costuming, you know, whatever. And okay, so then it wins Best Picture. But actually, Parasite didn't win all of those other things. It didn't win any of the acting awards, which makes sense to me because the acting style of Parasite was very theatrical. It's the Eastern style is not like the, what do we call it? The Marlon Brando movement in acting. It never made it to the Far East anyway. method acting, right? So method acting, completely replaced the theatrical style in this country. But in the East there, you know, so you have the character throwing herself over the table and yelling and screaming and people pounding things and, you know, and crying and throwing themselves on the ground. I found that very off-putting, personally. And, because it's just too big, I think, for the small screen, but that's what they're used to. Having said that, this was a movie that not only didn't win that many of the minor awards, it was, to me, undeserving of the major awards, right? And so let's just talk about screenplay. What would you say, how would you assess the story that Parasite was telling?
Initially, and I'd say till about halfway through, it was engaging. I thought it was going to go in a, you know, somewhat comic turn. It was a little bit funny. And then it seemed like someone stuck the end of another screenplay on it, a completely different, you know, goal with a completely different sort of genre even. It was just jarring and it didn't make sense to me.
Absolutely. I think that's a great assessment, a completely different goal. It's because the first half of the movie was about this poor family and how they were taking advantage of stupid rich people, this rich family, and they were doing it through nefarious means, right? They lie, they get people fired, they frame them, and then they move in on the stupid rich people and they start leeching off of them. And so I thought that was what the story is about, this family doing this awful thing to They want to, and I thought, okay, eventually they're going to get it all. They're going to take it all. But then suddenly, all of a sudden, this subplot is unfolded in the midpoint of the movie, before the midpoint, actually. And then the movie kind of goes off into this other area, and it becomes, then there's murder and people getting their heads smashed in and blood pooling on the ground and getting...
In the first half, no one, took it that far. None of the characters seemed to have, gross violence in their characters. And so when they started busting heads, I was just confused.
Confused. And we call that a radical change in tone, which is usually a sign of lack of creative control. So I think, and then you had the movie just keep going on and on and on. So in an era when the average movie length right now is about 110 minutes, and maybe it's between 100 and 110 minutes, really. Movies are getting shorter. This movie, Parasite, comes in at 133 minutes, right? So 2 hours and a half. And then you say, and for what? And it's meandering around trying to find an ending, trying to figure out what is the resolution of this sprawling kind of mess now, where you have all these characters just running around, and there doesn't seem to be, who's the protagonist? I mean, there's the question. Who was the protagonist of Parasite? Was it the son? Was it the father? Was it, the guy in the basement? Was it the family? I don't know. What would you say about that?
Maybe it's just funny. The child seemed to be the one with the problem who had the TP out back and saw this horrifying figure. Maybe he was the protagonist because he seemed to be the only one who was consistent all the way through.
Yeah, all the way through. You're right. Yeah. And so to me, that's a sign of a bad screenplay. It's like, who is the lead here? Whose story is this? How do they change? What is their goal? And the thing completely lost its way. And then again, I said I thought the acting was, they're beautiful. There were a couple of beautiful actresses, but their acting was, to me, off-putting. Production design, it all was put in the house. They basically, the whole set is a house, and I don't think that's necessarily production design. Hang on, we're going to continue talking about Parasite and the Oscars with my guest, Professor Angela Andrews. This is Barbara Nicolosi of Church of the Masses.
Hello, this is Terry Barber with the Terry and Jesse Show. I'm here with Gil Olivetti. He is the president of the Catholic Men's Fellowship of California. Gil, we got a men's conference coming up.
I appreciate you having me on, Terry, to share about our Rise Up, O Men of God, the Church for You Does Wait Super Saturday Conference, and it's Saturday, March 28th in Covina at Sacred Heart Catholic Church, 344 West Workman Street in Covina, California.
Who are the speakers?
We have some great speakers lined up. We have Steve Ruta, former captain of the LA Fire Department. He's dynamic. Mm-hmm. He's energetic. He will really keep the conference moving. We have Monsignor Tim Nichols, the pastor from St. John Vianney's.
Oh, yeah,
he's dynamic. Mark McElrath, Father Darren Merlino, a trained exorcist. Charlie Eshelman, a past Navy SEAL. We have Deacon Omar Uriati, who is from our parish, St. Louise de Marillac, and Father Joseph Shea.
And I'll be there myself, giving a little plug for Virgin Most Powerful.
You can reach us at catholicmen.org. Tickets are on sale there. Just follow the link. Tickets are on sale at eventbrite.com. Just be sure to get your tickets now till the 31st for $35, and $45 after that till the day of the conference.
Sign up for this men's conference. Call Gil at 626-841-9090.
I'll be sure to answer your call and give you all the information you need for the Rise Up, O Men of God, for You, the Church Does Wait conference. Thank you, Terry. Appreciate your help.
God bless you.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And hello and welcome back. This is Barbara Nicolosi, and sorry, I'm looking so Blair Witch Project here. My overhead light went out, and so sitting in the dark a little bit, kind of mysterious there. But anyway, so hold on. Let me see if I can make this. Hold on. Is that better? Oh, nope. Now I really lost my head. Sorry. Bad production value again. And Richard, this is not his fault, my engineer. This is all me. Oh, dear. Hold on. Sorry. Here, how about this? And there we go. Okay. So we're talking about the Academy Awards and the broadcast that aired this week, which... I am doing an example of bad production design. Here we go. We're talking about the Oscars, and my guest is Professor Angela Andrews from Regent University.
Hello.
Hello. Good. Welcome back. So, Parasite. This movie is one of the most it made history. It's the first time a foreign film since 1928 has been awarded Best Picture. And so you figure when that happens, that it wins Best Picture and Best Foreign Film, that this movie is absolutely stellar. It must be something truly, truly remarkable. And my feeling is au contraire. I don't think it was truly, truly remarkable. In fact, I actually got bored watching it at a certain point because when we were watching it, I just lost track of the story. And I was like, I don't know who I'm supposed to be rooting for here. I mean, how did you feel? You're trying to kind of just experience watching the film, Angela.
I think we have, over the years, got this rhythm of what a feature film like in America is going to be and what kind of pattern it's going to have. And it did seem like it had another half of an act on the end when it started raining and they... I don't know what that symbolized, but it did seem kind of long.
Yeah, very long and meandering and kind of in search of an ending and what it's about. So let's talk about why we think this movie then is given such an acclaim. So I first picked up on the momentum around it last fall. People started saying, oh, have you seen Parasite? Have you seen Parasite? You have to see Parasite. So a couple of my students said that. And then I was noticing on the Christian page of Hollywood Film and Faith on Facebook that a lot of Christians were saying this movie is incredible. Everybody needs to see it. And so it was on my radar that I was like, I guess I have to go see this film. And then I was like, what in the world? Why are people raving about this movie? And I have a theory, but I'd like to hear from you, Angela. Why do you think people are raving about this movie such that it made history? You know, it's the first movie, and we're talking, they could have given this to Fellini for 8.5, right? They didn't, you know? I mean, if you think of some of, they could have given it to Kurosawa for, you know, for any of his, they could have given it to... you know, the Seventh Seal by Bergman, you know, they didn't. They saved that for Parasite.
I will have to defer back to you. I can only think of a list of reasons of why it shouldn't have won. And there was like no global perspective or change of perspective in the characters that I could see. And I didn't think it's the South Korea today, not that I've examined the, you know, sociological factors in South Korea, but it just seemed, I don't know, it didn't go anywhere. It didn't have a resolution. It wasn't uplifting. And all these Hollywood folks, what if their help in their wealthy homes did something like that?
I know. Why? I know. Again, hypocrisy, that they're sitting here raving about this movie, which essentially says to their help, oh, you should take advantage of these people that you're working for because they're really idiots, right? The rich people are idiots. Yeah, that's a great point. My theory is this, that I think that this was a similar phenomenon to the movie Roma last year. So last year, Roma was the one that all of a sudden started getting all of this attention. Everybody needed to see Roma. It was a black and white movie about a Mexican woman who was like a maid. And I felt like, okay, they're raising this up because it's a way of getting at Trump because of his immigration policies. But all of a sudden it was the same kind of thing. Everybody was Roma, 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 right? You know, and I remember going to see it and there were two scenes of, no joke, the maid cleaning up dog poop. You know, on the big screen, I never wanted to see that before, you know, it's just like, this is not beautiful. This is disgusting. Why are we watching this? But anyway, that movie, they did give it, I believe, best foreign film, but, of course it did. I think it got nominated for best picture, but it didn't get it. And now this year it was Parasite. Here's what I think is going on. That the whole Trump phenomenon is about make America great again. Patriotism, America first. And so I think that the left, the Hollywood left, subconsciously, I don't think it's conscious, but I mean, it might be in some of them, but for a lot of them, the subconscious thing is to push back at that and say, no, America isn't all that, right? America is really, you know, kind of exploitive, and now we're embarrassed. And so the kind of opposite extreme of patriotism is that we're going to diss our own filmmaking industry and we're going to find outside of our borders, even if it indicts us, because actually it does, doesn't it? If they say we don't have a movie that we made that is as good as Parasite, this movie made by, you know, for a ridiculously low budget by a bunch of unknowns in South Korea, that, you know, they're indicting themselves. But here's the joke. They actually did make some better movies this year than Parasite. So I could pick three in that list of Best Picture nominees that I thought could have easily taken Best Picture. So 1917, ooh, right? Yeah. I mean, the scope of that achievement is astounding. Having said that, what killed 1917, I think, was this was white European men telling a story of a white European male hero in World War One. I can't have that, right? You know, so 1917, and then you had really a great film, which is up to over $200 million in box office, Ford versus Ferrari, Christian Bale and, what's his name? The partner of Ben Affleck, the one that was in Born Supremacy. Anyway, this is a chemo moment. Ford versus Ferrari was a great film. It worked. I'm not a car person, but I loved this film. It was riveting. It won both sound editing awards and sound effects. And that one could have won. And then finally, my dark horse was Little Women. I thought that this adaptation was stunning. It was creative. It was surprising. Beautifully executed, and that one, you know, was nominated for a whole slew of categories, including Best Costume, which it won, and Best Adapted Screenplay, which it lost to Jojo Rabbit. And then it had two acting awards that were for Little Women. So they actually did make better movies this year than Parasite. Isn't that kind of stunning? I mean, what does that say about where the industry is? What do you think?
That agenda is more important than filmmaking.
That agenda is more important than filmmaking. Yeah.
Well, the message, where you have a message in this film that we're supporting, you know, the distance yourself from Trump and push back, or what was
truly artistic and inspiring in our industry or our fields of art.
Yeah, I absolutely concur. Yeah. I think that it's an election year, so that also makes the message even more important, right, for them, you know. But there you mm-hmm. are, actually saying that you're, you know, dissing your own industry, in the name of and raising up something. And so, yeah, I think if you were gonna raise up a foreign film, there have been a slew in the last 100 years that you could have chosen. Any of which mm-hmm. were 100 times better than Parasite. Parasite was a sloppy mess. It had a really cool, interesting premise. Not a clever one, but it was an interesting premise. But then it was a sloppy mess as a story. And so the fact that even the Christians are praising it, and they're praising it, I think, because they want to look sensitive to the foreign, you know, it's South Koreans, we need to look, you know, we need to be on their side, you know, and the downtrodden. And this is a movie about the poor, you know, and their situation and how it makes them, you know, have to try things, you know, use their creativity to get ahead, whatever. You know, I've heard that said. But to me, it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous because in the end, the Oscar ought to go to the Best Picture. And it didn't this year. It really didn't.
I agree.
Any other thoughts you have, closing thoughts about the Oscar telecast? You know, so they're all scratching their heads and saying, wow, why didn't we have a bigger audience? If you were on the payroll of the Motion Picture Academy, Angela, what would you say to them about, okay, how to get, there was no host this year. That was another, they tried that again, and I don't know that it worked. So what would you say to the Oscars people about, okay, how to fix this broadcast for next year?
I think might be swimming upstream, but I really think there needs to be a host or someone to lead us through it. And the acts of, you know, in between the category announcements need to be appealing to a wider audience.
Absolutely. It's a lot of it was just strange, right? Strange. Oh, we forgot to say why Eminem decided to come back. He said, because he came back this year because he thought the year he won, he thought it was like a lame, stupid thing and that he never would win because that wasn't his world. And then he won and Barbara Streisand was there to present him the award and he wasn't even there. So it took him 17 years to repent of that and show up. but it was funny because I had heard the song before, you know, somewhere in my consciousness, and there it was all of a sudden winning. You know, playing with all the best, the nominees for this year's Best Picture. And it's kind of like, what is this? Right. But that's the story there. They finally talked him into coming, or he let them know that he wanted to. And so there you go. So
that was more important than the show.
Yeah. So that's our wrap up. Thanks for tuning in. And I think this was a better show than the Oscars this year. So there you go. Angela,
definitely.
Thanks for joining me. My name is Barbara Nicolosi, and this is Church of the Masses and the Most Powerful Radio Network. So stay tuned. We'll see you again.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.